Okay, this hour we're going to take your phone calls with John Coleman as we talk about climate change, the lack of it, what causes it, and your thoughts next on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast, John Coleman with us this hour. We'll take your phone calls as well. John, how did you get into weather? You must have loved it as a kid.
Well, I did, because it was the only time my dad would talk to me. I was the youngest of five kids, and after dinner every evening, Dad, who had been raised on a farm, even though he was a college professor, he still went for a walk like his dad had done, looked at the sky and predicted the weather for the next day. Remember, this is back in the dark ages, the 1930s. And we didn't have TV, radio, smartphones, and all giving us the weather. So he was predicting the weather for himself, and I would walk along with him. And I learned a lot of weather walking with my dad based on what he had learned from his dad walking on a farm up in Illinois back in the 1920s and 30s. So that's how I got interested. And then I got a job on TV. I wanted to be on the radio, so my dad would listen to me talk because I was the youngest of five. He wouldn't pay attention to me. But I noticed he listened to the radio. I got on the radio, and he listened to me. It worked. And then I got on TV. And one day, the weatherman didn't show up, and they said, "Who knows about weather?" And I held up my hand, and they put me on the air.
And there you went. And you were a giant in Chicago. You went to Good Morning America. And, John, I think I told you a couple years ago when we chatted that I was the news director in St. Louis when Dave Murray got plucked up to go out there after you. So I've got a lot of exposure with you guys, and you've done great work.
Well, there was a time in my life when I was a high school boy in Carbondale, Illinois, that my goal in life was to get a job in St. Louis TV. Never could make it.
It's a great market. It's a great market. And you went on to some incredible things. Well, let's take some calls with you from those of you who will be pro or against the man-made climate change. So let's go. We're not going to hide anybody here. John in Sheridan, Wyoming, welcome to the program. John, go ahead.
Thank you, George, for another great program. I love your guest because he's the first honest person to talk about this global warming fraud that I've heard in years. Since January 1st, 1985, I've done my own research. Since January 1st, 1985, while eight states have set or tied all-time record highs, 16 states have set or tied all-time record lows. Yet every time the media starts this global warming nonsense, I call them and say, "Hey, look, I will fax you the information. Just call me back. Here's my number. Give me a call, and I'll be glad to fax you the information." Never hear from them. Deafening silence. So if you would like, before I go off, George, I can talk to your screener and give him or get from him your fax number where I can fax you this information, and you can have it, and you can verify it yourself.
Okay. Sure thing. I'll put you on hold.
I love that. You're absolutely right, of course. And in the last few weeks, we've had several pretty good cold snaps that have started in early fall through the Rockies and the Plain States. And on those days, we've had hundreds of record lows for the date set, and only a couple of record highs set in the nation. And yet the media totally ignores it. And if you look at the countries of the world and their all-time record highs, almost all of them were set in the last century, not this century.
Indeed. Okay, we're going to get you my fax number, John, and you can fire away there for us. Let's go to another John, this time in Iowa. I'm full of Johns tonight. John, go ahead. Welcome to the show.
Hi. I'm feeling kind of really disappointed that scientists, you know, can be politically coerced away from the truth. I was brought up, taught that reporters are supposed to uncover the truth and not create the news, and that scientists heroically uncover the truth in the laboratory and not slant it. I'm just wondering if there are really any universities who valiantly still teach us about, you know, natural law. We let God and the universe show us, rather than we have this positivistic, where we sort of inform God and then we take a vote, and then the political class decides what's truth. I mean, is there really anywhere that, I mean, how did this happen? I thought the Constitution was based on natural law. science.
Well, John, you heard me talking about my father being a college professor. He was, and so I was around a university as a young man, and a lot of college professors. Let me tell you, they're all liberals. They're all do-gooders. They all feel a great arrogance that they are smarter than we are and must show us the way. And from communist to Democrat to super lib, believe me, that's where they all fall. And so, and young people who come up out of high school who want to be either scientists or get into the media are tend to be save the world types. I've got a mission in life. I'm going to spread the word, save the world. And so they can find a cause celeb. The sky is falling. And I'm going to save you from it. That boy, that makes them feel like they have accomplished their life's goal. And it's doggone it. It is awful. I mean, it's just awful, John, that we have this incredible distortion of science that has occurred. But I got to tell you, best I can tell, and I've studied it hard, it's happened.
John, is there a university or is there a professor somewhere who teaches what you and I have been believing all these years?
Well, sure there are.
There are, okay.
They have trouble getting any attention, but at MIT, there's Richard Lindzen, who's fabulous, now retired, of course, is famous Dr. Fred Singer from the University of Virginia. There's a William Happer, who was a university professor at, I'm forgetting where, and this man who created all the stir at UCLA this past week, Dr. Engstrom, he's there, and he's teaching, and he's doing his job. They're there, but they're under great pressure. I feel so much for my friend Willie Soon at this Smithsonian Observatory at Harvard, where he's an astrophysicist, and he gets great, great pressure. And whenever he discusses climate change in public, he has to totally remove himself from the university, and he can't. His colleagues don't have anything to do with him, and he can't get any grants. It's tough.
What about internationally? What's happening in other countries? Are other scientists?
We have some great professors in Canada and in Australia. We've had a huge success where the professors have penetrated the media, and the new government that was elected this year has totally turned around, and they now realize that there is no significant man-made global warming, that there's not going to be any, there is no crisis, and they have cut out the cap and trade and all the research and cut it way back. And in Germany, they have realized after going on a huge wind power binge that what a horrible disaster it has been financially, and how the cost of electricity is driving industry into the ground. And they have reversed that. So there are points of progress.
Is it safe to say that wherever you go, that there's going to be a battle with the climate change, but that, let's say, over the last 200 years, we've had the same kind of weather. We've had huge tornadoes. We've had huge hurricanes. We've had all kinds of storms. Nothing's changed.
Well, there are changes, constant changes. For instance, since Hurricane Sandy, which was, by the way, not a one of the strongest hurricanes, just happened to hit at high tide in a highly populated area.
In the wrong spot.
Since Hurricane Sandy, we haven't had a significant hurricane hit the United States. And here we are, two-thirds of the way through the hurricane season this year, without anything happening here. In terms of tornadoes, we're way down on tornadoes this year, about half of the number that normally occurs. So these things do come and go and vary. We haven't had a real heat wave now for several years, even though here in the West where I live, I'm now living in San Diego, it has been a pretty hot year. But worldwide, the year has not been hot at all. even though NOAA has manipulated the data. I hate this, but they are under government orders from the administration. You do it now, and they've managed to manipulate the data, and they're going to claim this is the warmest year ever in the United States. Sheer nonsense. But in any case, the climate is constantly changing, but very much for the better. The Antarctic ice cap, at the South Pole, is the most extensive and measured history. Al Gore said to all be gone by this year in the summer months. Well, it's not. It's the most, and the North Pole ice is above average right now. The climate comes and goes. It changes, and we just must not get all excited about it, because that's the very nature of this planet, which is in constant change.
Let's go to Frank in Denver, Colorado now on our wild card line. Frank, you're on with John Coleman. Go ahead.
Thank you. John, I agree partially with you. We're probably not changing the climate, but we are changing the toxins in the atmosphere. We're destroying the ocean. We're destroying our climate. We're destroying the environment, all because of these toxic chemicals from the petrochemical industry.
Well, I will tell you that there's no question that we have pollution issues. In terms of the so-called ocean acidification, which gets an awful lot of talk, that is just talk. That's not really happening at all. But in terms of our polluting of the land, air, and water through our misuse of chemicals, our failure to control chemicals, certainly we are creating some pollution. But are we destroying the climate in the process, making the earth uninhabitable? No. We're creating problems, and we're working very hard to correct them, and we're making some progress. I agree with you, we must stay vigilant, but I do not think that we are in a crisis because of it.
Are the oceans dying, John? Some say the fish life is
getting smaller and smaller. The fishermen here on the West Coast are ecstatic. They've had the best year they've had in two decades. It's been amazing.
Gee,
year.
Problem is they're probably pulling in polluted fish, though.
No, they are not. But on the other hand, for sure, there are people who will scream and holler that. But the truth is, the fish are okay. Now, could it all be better? You bet. And do we need to be very concerned about chemical mishandling of chemicals? Yes, we certainly must. I love this little blue marble we live on, and realize that, you know, we have a role as the guardians of this planet, which is all we've got, that we must protect it for our children and grandchildren. I think we're doing a better job than the alarmist would let you think. And for sure, the world's full of articles and videos and hollering and screaming about problems. And every time I look at one, I see that it's not nearly so serious as we're being told it is, and that we are working and taking good and solid steps to get it under control.
Well, in like the 1800s or early 1900s, when they used a lot of coal in like big cities like New York and places like that, what was it like to walk around and breathe? Was it horrible?
Well, it was ugly. And of course, we have the same thing now in much of China, because they have continued to build coal-fired power plants without good scrubbers, without reprocessing the coal, without doing all the things we're doing to clean up that exhaust from those plants. So you talk to people who visit China, and they'll tell you that the atmospheric conditions are just horrid. The pollution is frightening. And yes, it wasn't just the big cities that had that. My hometown as a teenager in Carbondale in southern Illinois, I remember the smog hanging over it in the late 40s and 50s when I was a boy.
Yeah.
And I know the stoker coal that we were burning in our house was just as dirty as it could be, but it's all we had to keep us from freezing to death, and we got through it. I'm so happy that we've got that cleaned up for the most part, and we don't have a serious air pollution problem today. But I don't want to say there is none. It's just not. It's not serious. We're making great progress. We're doing fine.
What did you do on those hot summer nights without air conditioning in Carbondale?
I listened to Harry Carey broadcast the Cardinal game, as any good boy in that area did.
Yeah, he was one of a kind.
And then fell asleep with the window open and no covers.
I love it. Let's go next to Mark in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Mark, it's your turn. Go ahead, sir.
Good evening, gentlemen.
Hi there.
Yes, in regard to the oceans, I've been coming to South Florida, and I've lived here many years, the last 21 years. And when I was 8 years old, I'm 57 now. When I was 8 years old, I used to snorkel out 300-400 yards off the beach at Lauderdale by the Sea and the Lauderdale Beach. And it was beautiful, pristine. I mean, crimson colored fan coral, you know, and big, beautiful brain coral and stuff. And in the last 20, 25 years, it's silted over. There are deep black holes of cancerous effect in the brain coral. All of the fan coral is bleached out white now. You know, I mean, it's nasty out there now.
What do you think caused it?
Really, it's terrible.
What caused it? What do you think?
Well, I'll tell you what. I was out at the pier about 9 months ago. Okay, and they were pumping water out from West Palm Beach or up in that area, Boca, and it looked like Prestone antifreeze. It was nasty green looking.
Ugh.
You know, normally it's blue, clearish, or blue, beautiful. But they were pumping this stuff out by the millions and millions of gallons, and it looked terrible.
You have a lot of boats down there. You have a lot of cruise ships. You have a lot of freighters. You have a lot of oil tankers. And I don't think that they are nearly as clean as they ought to be. And I think that there's sewage releases from those boats. I think their engine systems are not nearly as well protected. Because they are not—they're not American flagships, so they don't have to follow American laws. And I don't think that—and I think that an awful lot of that problem you're seeing relates to the ocean-going vessels that are coming in and out of that port and along that west coast, along that coast of Florida, that east coast of Florida. Now, here in Southern California, where we have very little cruise ship action— We have a wonderful snorkeling area just off the coast of La Jolla, which is a neighborhood of San Diego, that is just pristine and absolutely gorgeous and has not been in any way destroyed. But we don't have much shipping here. And the Navy, which follows very careful rules about which has a huge base in operation here, does not create a great pollution like those foreign.
Well, and what they should be doing, John, is they should get off climate change, let Mother Nature do what it's going to do every year, and concentrate on incredible pollution. I'm George Norrie. We'll be back with final phone calls with John Coleman in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Well, we're going to take final phone calls here when we come right back with John Coleman. Hey, by the way, have you had a chance yet to watch our television program, Beyond Belief? You can simply go to the website, look at the trailer, sign up, and look at all the shows. It is one of America's fastest-growing internet-based programs, and a lot of people are telling me that they're getting these little tiny devices where now you can take a wireless signal from a computer and watch everything on your television set, and that's how they're doing that. It's very, very advantageous to a lot of people. Simply go to this website, beyondbelief.com. Welcome back, John Coleman with us. We'll get to your calls, final segment here. John, what do you think of my thoughts that we get off this climate change kick totally and start concentrating on pollution?
Well, I think that that's a very worthwhile activity, but I think we also should devote a lot of our effort to coming up with the 21st century solutions to replace fossil fuels. I mean, it's yes, they're good, that when we've learned to use them very well, but I think in the end, we want to phase them out. And I think, have you heard of graphene? George?
No, I have not. Tell me more about that.
Graphene won the science Nobel Prize 2 years ago. Graphene. A couple of French scientists discovered it. And it is the best conductor and the strongest metal ever developed by mankind. And all it is a one molecule thick coat of carbon. And it's called graphene. Graphene is... Remember that old movie, The Graduate?
Oh, I sure do, with Dustin Hoffman.
That old movie.
Plastics, right?
Yeah. Here's the word for you, young man, at his graduation party, plastics. Well, here's the word for the 21st century, graphene. More than 200 patents have already been issued, and
wow.
We're just learning now how to make the stuff. But in the end, we will be able to paint a car with a paint with graphene in it that will become 1,000 times more sensitive solar panel than any solar panels today, and will power that car gorgeously, and will be able to make a graphene battery that will essentially weigh less than a pound, but will be able to hold enough power to run that car all night long. That's coming.
That is
amazing.
And
the same with painting a house with graphene paint and powering that house. This is coming.
I gotta study up on
this. My lifetime, but in your lifetime, I think, by the time you're as old as I am, it's going to be here.
How old are you?
This is going to be amazing.
How old are you, Mr. Coleman?
I just passed my 80th birthday.
Well, good for you.
And
you've got a lot of energy.
Great.
You know what? That's because you don't stop and you have a passion. That's so important.
I have
important.
A lot of passions. I've even invented 2 new apps in the last few months. I
mean, good for you.
I'm busy.
Let's take some final calls here for you. Mary's in Cincinnati, Ohio. Mary, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
George, thank you for your wonderful guest tonight. And Mr. Coleman, thank you very much for inventing that weather channel. My family traveled a lot, and every time we checked into a hotel, we turned the TV on, and the weather channel was on. The previous person had it on. All right, 2 quick questions. As you know, in Ohio, we had a horrible winter this past winter. My question is, do you foresee another horrible winter for the Midwest? And my second question is, how do you think these chemtrails are affecting the weather?
Mary, thank you. I have never been a super great long-term forecaster, but I have friends who are very good long-term forecasters. And those friends at Weather Bell, Joe DeLeo and Joe Bastardi, tell me that this winter will probably be very much like last winter, that it will be very cold and very snowy and very icy in the Great Lakes. That there in Ohio, I have, that's where my family comes from originally, and I have lots of relatives still in the area, that it's going to be a pretty rough winter for you. I'm sorry to say that. Now, the issue of chemtrails, as best I can tell, chemtrails are not valid. We certainly have contrails, and contrails certainly have an impact on the weather. If you go to Kansas, where the high-flying aircraft going east and west and in all directions are at very high altitude all day long, every day, there's more and more high cloudiness over Kansas, and it has cooled off the state a bit because of that high cloudiness. There are scientists who will say, John, you're nuts, but I can see that. That's an activity of man that's affecting the weather. Don't get me wrong, that man isn't affecting the weather. Yes, he is. It's not a crisis, but it's real. Just as urban heat islands are very real, every city is much warmer than the suburbs around it and the farmlands around it. There's no question about that. Mankind affects the climate, but it is not a crisis and not disastrous.
Not a believer in chemtrails, though, huh, Mr. Coleman?
No, I can't believe in chemtrails. I see no evidence that our government is in any way emitting chemicals into the atmosphere. I don't think it's happening.
They're finding, I should get you in touch with some people who've been on the show. They're finding some.
I read a lot about that, and, you know, my mind is always open, but I have not found any evidence that I buy into.
Let's go to Rick in Roslyn, New York now. Rick, it's your turn. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi, George and John.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call.
I believe, as you do, George, that this is a cyclical thing that happens on the planet, and it's not, has nothing to do with what we're doing. But I wanted to bounce something off John. Sure. I'm about 10 years younger than you, John, and about, oh, it was a long time ago, at least 10 years. Like the last 5-10 years, we're all talking about climate change, but before that, there was Al Gore talking about global warming. Remember when he first started introducing that?
Oh, yeah, I remember it very well.
Right.
I know the whole story.
Well, I didn't have that much of an interest because it wasn't like, you know, they weren't trying to pump everybody up with fear about it. Back then, Al Gore was talking about it a little bit. And there was this program that came on PBS in New York here, and it was called The Myth of Global Warming. And so I was watching it one weekend night, and the interesting part that caught my attention is they sent a bunch of scientists from Europe that were really well documented and, you know, had all the degrees up the yin yang, and they went either, I don't know where it was, it was either Greenland or Antarctica, but they did very heavy ice core drilling, enough to establish the weather back not tens of thousands, a hundred thousands, but millions of years.
Yes.
And what they came up with was a conclusion I'll never forget. They said that the Earth has had 5 great ice ages, they could only go back so many million years, has had 5 great ice ages. And these ice ages don't last decades or centuries. They last hundreds of thousands of years. And at the peak of these ice ages, the entire Earth can be encapsulated by as much as a mile thick of ice, 2 miles in some places. The whole Earth, and then it cools off. They said, but however, during the ice ages, there are fluctuations where for 30,000 or 40,000 years, you'll get an increase in temperature, much like the recorded history that we have here on Earth for 30 or 40,000 years. But then it eventually goes back down again, and this cycle keeps on repeating. So when all this stuff just recently started coming up about climate change, I called PBS because they have libraries. You can get any of their programs. And I gave them the title of the thing, and they swore up and down on a stack of Bibles in a very strange way that there was never any such program. And I remember it. It was just it went against everything I'd been taught in school when I heard this, that they lasted, that an ice age could last 500,000 to 2.5 million years in duration, and that fluctuation.
Let me speak to it. First of all, I would be amazed if PBS did that program. I'm like the PBS people. You know, I've paid attention to this and followed PBS through all my years, and I can't believe they ever did the show. But second, I think somebody did, and you thought it was a PBS show, but it wasn't. That's what I'm guessing. And I think it was right on target. I mean, if you look at my talk on global warming on YouTube, you'll see that chart showing those great ice ages. And for sure, the Earth has had 5 of them, and it's that data is based on these ice cores. And there's no question that those scientists who drill those ice cores produced very good evidence that those actually occurred. And they were dramatic, and they were long. In terms of the entire Earth being covered by ice, I have never heard of that before now. I know that 60% of it has been covered by very thick ice. But 100%, I never heard that one, but I'm not going to say it never happened. I'm going to tell you that this evidence would indicate not, that we have certain places where we know the ice ended, because it ended up plowing up dirt, such as the ice dug the Great Lakes there in the Midwest and Eastern U.S.
Just moved everything, ice, didn't it?
And that left mountains where it stopped, but that dirt that it had pushed up from the Great Lakes as that ice sheet moved southward, and those, the mountains that we have down across Kentucky and Tennessee and over into Missouri and Arkansas, those mountains are in fact the end of the southern extent of the ice from the last ice age. And if there was a previous ice age where the ice went further south, I have no evidence of it, and I don't know of it.
Great job, though, John. You've done just a marvelous job, I think, presenting to the public this, what I feel to be critical information about what's going on. And let me ask you the question about the solar system. I am told the solar system is heating up. Other planets are getting hotter. I don't think we have industry out there, do we?
Well, there is some warming in the solar system, but I do not want to pretend for you that I understand everything that's going on out there. This is exceedingly complex, and if our understanding of the entire solar system and beyond, and the influence of interstellar space on our solar system, is really not nearly as great as the textbooks would make you want to think. There's an awful lot of blanks, an awful lot of things still to find out. But there's no question about, yes, that there's a generally a warming trend within our solar system. And of course, right now, we have one of the biggest solar flare in the last 20 years taking place on the sun. And that certainly has an impact. We also have, of course, the volcano action is reaching somewhat of a peak out in Hawaii, and that has some impact. And we have a recent map produced based on new under ocean studies that show more than 600 volcanoes on the bottom of the ocean that we didn't even know existed before.
Active volcanoes, right?
Yeah, active volcanoes. And you don't think that has an impact? You bet it does.
It's like boiling water, isn't it?
So, well, yeah, it's 4,000 degrees. So we don't even know. Our knowledge is pretty limited.
Sure is. Let's go next to whose turn? It is Keith in Murrieta, California. Hey, Keith, thanks for holding. Go ahead.
George, thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
John,
my pleasure.
Great to be able to speak to you, John. Longtime fan, originally from Chicago, so I caught you growing up on the news in Chicago.
Well, hi to Murrieta. I drive through there on the 15 pretty regularly. Good to talk to you.
My career is in the business of artificial climate change. I'm in the heating, air conditioning, and refrigeration industry. And one of the things that we teach students at a very early portion of their career is the law of thermodynamics. And, you know, simple physics, I think that's taught in basic high school, you know, that heat's a form of energy that, you know, cannot be created nor destroyed, and it's constantly in motion from a warmer place to a cooler place. And if somebody such as myself, who's not Harvard educated, can wrap my head around that, and so can a high school student, I fail to understand why we have these highly decorated scientists that continue to push the farce of global warming. If the premise of thermodynamics is grasped and it's understood, our climate's always in flux.
Your point is, every day. Magnificently well made. It is as puzzling as heck to me how they cling on to this failed theory. And George has asked the question, is it fraudulent? Are they consciously lying to us? Or have they convinced themselves that their theory is valid and that we just don't understand? And I can't quite sort it out. It's some of both. But, you know, you go to a used car lot, and that salesman, that car lot, will tell you that he has the best cars on the face of the earth, and this car is the best car for you. And does he believe that, or is he just fraudulently touting that? Well, he has convinced himself that it is so. And I think it's somewhat the same with these scientists. They've convinced themselves that it's so, and they don't want to, their mind is now closed.
They sure are. Let's take another call or two. Chad in the state of Washington now. Chad, go ahead.
Yeah. Hi, George. How's it going?
Hi, Chad. Good.
I mainly called because I kind of think it's funny that he says that we're not in a crisis as far as the chemtrail issue, but I refer to it as geoengineering, and I'd really like if you could get on a man named Dane Wigginton to help educate him on the issue of geoengineering or SRM, solar.
Well, let me tell you that I have read extensively on chemtrails. It's not that I'm closed-minded. It's not that I'm refusing to listen or study, but there has not what I have read has not convinced me, because the whole chemtrail thing depends upon our government doing a chemical treatment to secretly control our people, and I just can't buy that. I understand how airplanes produce the trails across the sky from their cooling and warming of the atmosphere, and that those trails are real, but as best I can tell, they are not chemical. Any, they're just water vapor, and I can't find any evidence to the contrary.
Lots of strange things going on this planet, though, John.
Well, you talk about strange things. My goal in life, I talked about being 80, and I know we're about done here. What is my goal for the rest of, what was my hope for the rest of my life? I hope that before I die, that we will make contact with intelligent life elsewhere in the universe.
That would be exciting.
I know the universe is teeming with it, and SETI and others, including NASA, have constantly searched for it. My favorite movie, one of my favorite movies of all time, is Contact.
Me too.
And I want that to happen. That will be the biggest event to happen in modern times. Oh, what an event that will be when we make contact. But, I'm 80. I want it to happen so I can be part of it. I want to see it happen. But darn it, I don't see it happening.
John Coleman, you keep doing what you're doing. John's websites are linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Up next, Travis Walton joins us as we approach his 39th anniversary of his abduction. That's next.